Good morning, church. It is good to be with you. Good to be gathered together. And it is good for summer to be coming to a close, if for no other reason than to get us back together on a somewhat regular basis. What a blessing it is to be in a family like Forest Mill and to have a time of worship and a singing like that. Tommy, I did not know that last song at all. But I've got a copy of Sacred Selections in my office. I'll go look it up. So, did not sound like a new one to me. That was a good one. That was a good one. Yeah, it does go with what we're going to be talking about. It is, it's such a blessing to get to not only be together and to worship together, which is always great, but it's an opportunity to serve together as well, and I'm so thankful for all the opportunities Russ mentioned right at the outset of ways for you and I to serve. And I hope we have that serving mindset, both at home and at our jobs and the community, wherever we may be. Last week, we started talking about the value of taking the great commandment, at least the second half of the day, great commandment about loving your neighbor as yourself. We specifically talked about that, taking that literally and seriously. And about how easy it is, how tempting it is to turn that teaching into just nothing more than a metaphor. Like, we don't have to literally love our neighbors. We just kind of have to love them in general, and that doesn't really require anything of us. Now, who this week, we talked about this idea of a tic-tac-toe board. Imagine your house was sitting in the middle, and that those people all around you are your neighbors. No, this probably does not look like your neighborhood, at least not in Manchester. Most of our neighborhoods don't look like this. We've got people who are a few feet further away than this, and sometimes they're all cattywampus or spread out over sometimes several hundred feet or yards or even miles. I mean, not several hundred miles, but, you know, several miles between our nearest neighbors. But we've all got people who live around us in some way or the other. And we had you last week kind of draw a tic-tac-toe board with your house in the middle and the other houses all kind of scattered around it. How many of you were able to fill in a name on just one of these little tic-tac-toe squares this week? Was anybody able to fill in a name this week? A few? There's a few back there. All right. Well, I just want to let y'all know that we're going to ask this question again next week, and I will publicly humiliate each of us. If that's what it takes. No, that's good. I'm glad some people have had the opportunity to do that, to find out the name of a neighbor. And my best guess is that most of us probably walked out of here last week feeling at least somewhat conflicted. Because on the one hand, hopefully, you found a renewed sense of value to just learn the name of the people who live around you. I hope you felt that, of getting to know the person who lives, you know, literally next door to you or in your neighborhood just a little bit better, or whether you learn their last name, or you learn their first name, or you learn where they work, or if they have kids, and just learning about them in general. And if you are like me, you're thinking to yourself, how in the world am I going to find time to do any of that? Because my life is so full already, you know, how am I going to have time for one new relationship, much less eight? I mean, if you really jump on board, how am I going to have time for all that? Anyone besides me feel like that? Like you already have enough to do? Oh, y'all just have all this spare time. That's so good. Yeah, I feel like I don't really have time to add these relationships. And I believe that the issue of time is actually one of, if not the biggest obstacle that we have to overcome if we're going to get serious about getting to know our literal neighbors. Because it does require time. And so this morning, I want us to wrestle with this question. This is our big question for the day, is do we live at a pace that allows us to be available to those around us? Do we live at a pace that allows us to be available to our neighbors? Now, we live in a culture that really values progress and efficiency and getting things done. If you were to go and open up my email just this morning, you'd find out that my email is divided up into all these little categories that keeps me from having to go through all of my email. Three clicks and every piece of advertising that comes to my email, and I do not know how to stop them all, but every piece of advertising that comes to my email, three clicks, they're all wiped out. Three more clicks and I can get rid of all the social media stuff. And I don't know how to stop those either. And I've tried. And they keep coming to my email, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or MySpace. I don't know. They just keep coming. And three clicks and I can wipe all of those out. And they're gone. I have on my phone, I have this calendar that that reminds me of things that I'm supposed to get done that day. And it's like time to leave for a meeting. Bing, my little phone goes, bing, and I know that I'm supposed to leave for a meeting in order to make it in time to do this thing, or time to open the gym for a group that is coming by, or time to go back to the bus garage to drive the afternoon route because I don't watch the clock super close. Little reminder, bing, it is time to go do that thing. Just a little reminder to check off the to-do list. And that list of stuff to get done every day seems to just kind of max most of us out. Job and family and house stuff, errands and chores and to-do lists. By the time we finish going through just like the basic stuff, it feels like it's more than enough, right? And have you ever thought about the fact that we live in a time of more energy-saving devices than at any other point in history? We have more time-saving devices. Did I say energy? We have more time-saving devices than any other point in history. If someone had told you 20, 25 years ago that you were going to be able to do all of this stuff, you would have had a hard time imagining how it was going to get done. That you're going to be able to answer calls and just dictate text messages and emails and letters while you are driving your car. If someone had told you that, even in the year 2000, or if someone had come and told you that if you are really up on technology in 20 years, your car will just drive itself and you can do all kinds of things. I mean, and you're not even going to have to plan. Like, if you like a TV show, you don't even have to plan to watch that TV show. You can watch any TV show ever made in the history of the world at any point, and you don't have to plan it at all. And if there's new episodes coming out on a TV show, you don't have to worry about that. You can record it to a device automatically, or you can just watch it later on streaming. I mean, there's just all these. You can skip all the commercials. I mean, if you told me that, I'd have been ready to jump to the future right then. I mean, no more commercials. If you knew then, 25 years ago, all that you could do now, you'd probably be wondering what you're going to do with all this extra time you're going to have. I mean, because you could do in 25 hours what used to take you 40 hours, right? And you'd be right. By the way, that's about how much time we've saved in the last 20 years. Saved about 15 hours a week. Don't know if you know that or not. Yeah, we've saved 15 hours a week in the last 20 years. And so you'd be thinking with all those technological advancements, we've been so much more efficient that we can do so many different things, right? So those of you who lived 20 years ago may be thinking, well, you'd get to spend more time gardening or golfing or traveling or baking or whatever it is you love to do. You're going to get to do 15 more hours per week of that, and you get to do so much more in the future, right? But here we are, 20 years later, saved 15 hours a week, and what have most of us done with those extra hours? All that time that's been created in our life, all that space, we have filled it up, haven't we? We just do more and more and more because we're afraid that if we don't, we're going to either miss out or worse, fall behind. And there are a number of different myths behind this fear. Oh, I didn't write this one down. Okay. Well, a lot of different myths behind this fear. Myths that we gotta kind of deal with. One, the myth is that someday things are going to settle down. We tell ourselves someday this is going to slow down. We tell ourselves, if I can just make it through this week, after that it's going to be smooth sailing. If I can just get through this month, first month of school, teachers, right? If I can just get through this first month, I'll have all the kids broken in, the material will all be laid out. If I can just get through this first month, I can just get through that'll help the rest of the year. Or if I can just get through this year, this is just a rowdy bunch of kids I got this year. If I can get through this bunch, after that it will be smooth sailing. Or if I can just get through this season in life, this hard time in life, parents with small kids, you know what I'm talking about. You're thinking, if I could just get them all out of diapers, then it'd be all smooth sailing. But the truth is that things are only going to slow down when we become very intentional about saying no to some things, or if something major happens that makes us slow down, like losing a job or the decline of our health. I mean, something has to make us slow down for things to slow down. Second myth, someday more will be enough. And that's the theory that if I just get this one more thing, if I just have this next thing, then I'll have everything I need. It makes me think of a scene from a movie with Steve Martin where he's walking out of an apartment. He goes, all I need is this chair and I'll be happy, right? I'm not going to go through the movie, but he ends up grabbing just armloads of things on the way out the door, saying, all I need is this and this and this. And if we start thinking that, if all I have to have is a new car or a new house or a new job or a new spouse or better kids, maybe I'm the only one that thinks that. But if all I had to have is these one more thing to be happy, then we're going to drive ourselves crazy. I mean, we're going to end up losing everything thinking we have to have one more thing. So that's myth number two. Myth number three is that everybody lives like this. We tell ourselves, I'm just doing what's normal because everybody does this, right? That everybody lives at this incredibly hectic pace. Everyone is just flying along like me, barely clinging to the sides, hoping to hang on for dear life. And that may seem like it's true, but the reality is everyone does not live like this. Everyone does not live with the sense that there is just too much to get done in too little time. And in fact, Jesus tells us that there is a different way to live. This morning, I want us to take a look at a text in which Jesus teaches us about this different way of living. It's found in Luke chapter 10. If you have your Bibles, you want to be following along with us this morning. We started in this same chapter last week, and Walt brought it up earlier. It is the very next story. We have the story of the Good Samaritan where the young teacher of the law comes to Jesus and it's like, what is the most important commandment? What do I have to do? And Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all you have, with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love God with all you have and love your neighbor as yourself. So this guy was asking Jesus, what's the most important thing? Jesus tells him this is the most important thing. And then the man says, well, who is my neighbor? Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan that we talked about last week. This is the very next story in that same chapter. And it's probably a familiar story to those of you who've grown up in church. It's the story of Mary and Martha. And this is what it says. And Jesus and his disciples were, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. And she came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed. Indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what's better, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, we need to unpack this story just a little bit. And ladies who have gone to Ladies' Day, I apologize for rehashing this for the 10,000th time, because this is apparently a very popular topic with y'all. But guys, we need to hear this, so we're going to go over it for our sakes, if not for the ladies' sakes. Now, the phrase that she used to describe Martha is that she was distracted by her preparations of hosting. Her busyness caused her to miss out on the opportunity to spend more time with Jesus and with others. Now this text has kind of always sort of rubbed me the wrong way, because I'm an oldest kid, and when something needs to get done, I just think we need to just get it done. And it looks at first glance that Martha is the one who really gets it. One, she's the one who opens her home to Jesus, which is pretty commendable. This rabbi comes through town. She takes it upon herself. She's the one who's going to open her home to Jesus, and she's the one who cares so much about Jesus, she's going to get all this stuff done. And Jesus and all his followers come in, and she starts preparing a meal for him. But as we take a closer look, we see that Martha has become distracted. She's rushed. She hurries to get everything done that needs doing, and in the process, she misses out on the main thing. Now, over the years, I've been privileged to get to take a part in a lot of people's wedding ceremonies. And one of the things that I've noticed is that oftentimes in all the craziness that leads up to a wedding, and it is invariably craziness that leads up to a wedding, because there is so much stuff that needs to get done. And in all that busyness for that huge event, all the preparations that have to be made, all the details that have to be taken care of, that so often people, the families, the brides, the grooms, everybody, they spend so much time checking off the little boxes of things that have to be done, worrying about each and every detail, rushing around at the last minute to make sure everything is taken care of, that everything is just right. And they're so busy doing all that they actually miss the wedding. Now, I don't mean to say that they're not present, they're not physically there, but that they're there and then it's over with before they know it. They put all this time and energy into this event, and when this ceremony's over, they just kind of stand there with a little bit of a blank stare on their face, like, is that it? I mean, I was like, I don't know what you're expecting, but with all the time and money and energy that is poured into this event, they've missed out on the fact that they are now actually married. You would think that would be understood, but it is not. And Martha's story reminds us that there is a danger of missing the point when we get hurried, when we worry about the wrong things. And this does not just happen in Martha's story. This does not just happen in weddings. This happens to you and to me in our everyday spiritual lives. There's a book that's called The Life You've Always Wanted. Anybody read that? It's by John Ortberg. It's a fantastic book. Highly recommend it if you have not read it. John Ortberg is the one who's teaching our Wednesday night class while I stand at the... Well, he comes up on the screen and we talk about his lessons because he's fantastic. So he wrote this book. It's called The Life You've Always Wanted. And he says, in one of the most powerful parts of the book, he says, hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our day. And he coins this phrase. He calls it hurry sickness. And he goes on to say that the reason hurry is so dangerous is that love and hurry are fundamentally incompatible. Love always takes time, and time is the one thing hurried people don't have. Love and hurry are fundamentally incompatible because love always takes time, and time is the one thing hurried people do not have. In our relationships, and whether it's our spouses or our kids or our coworkers or our neighbors or... In those relationships, hurry, it's toxic. If we are too busy to be present with those people, it's it's toxic. And in looking at Martha's story, what's so striking is that what Martha was doing, Martha wasn't doing anything wrong. She wasn't doing anything bad. She invited Jesus into her home, and she's being reprimanded for what? For skipping out on her responsibilities, for saying ugly words, for neglecting a relationship. No, she's not being reprimanded for anything like that. She's being reprimanded for serving Jesus. That's what Jesus gets on to her about. Because what Jesus was actually saying is that we often have to say no to the good things in order to center our lives around the main thing. We have to say no to things that we think are important, that we think are good, things that are even necessary. If we're going to focus on the main thing, everything else has to fall in place around that. Now, again, remember that this story falls in Luke's gospel. By the way, Luke does not arrange things chronologically. Very little of the gospels are arranged chronologically. They're not there to tell you like a documentary of Jesus' life. That's the way I always thought about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That is not the way they are arranged. They are arranged to teach you about who Jesus was. So some of the things may be from, you know, Jesus' first year of ministry, and then there'll be some things later about that come from his third year of ministry, and they'll just kind of mix and match stories in order to teach us about Jesus. Now, thematically, they're arranged more by themes. There is some chronology in that. I'm not trying to dismiss that. But what was more important to the gospel's authors was to teach us important things about Jesus. And so when he puts the story of Mary and Martha right after the story of the Good Samaritan, it's not just because that happened to be the next thing Jesus did. It was more important to Luke to tell us what Jesus was teaching and to reinforce that point, right? So we find collections of stories from Jesus that are arranged by theme, like the lost things found in Luke chapter 15. Well, here, this chapter, Luke 10, is about the most important thing. What's the most important commandment? Love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself. Who's my neighbor? Good Samaritan. Mary and Martha. Martha's like, Lord, why don't you tell her to do this? And he's like, that's important, that's good, but that's not the most important thing. You're missing the main thing, which is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Then we turn to the story of Mary, the other sister, and we look at her story. It's important that we understand what is kind of going on here culturally. Why this is a big deal, that Mary's not doing what Martha wants her to do. This one sentence is kind of loaded with some cultural significance that might, for most of us at least, be easy to skip right over. That Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. Now, to you and I, that doesn't sound like a big deal because people sit and listen all the time. But in their culture, in the Hebrew culture, to sit at the feet of a rabbi, a teacher, which is what Jesus was. Jesus was a rabbi. Jesus was an itinerant teacher traveling around. To sit at the feet of a rabbi indicated a relationship between a disciple and a teacher. And so Mary sitting at Jesus' feet goes against a number of cultural norms. One, women were not supposed to be students, not at this stage in life. They're not supposed to be disciples of a rabbi. Secondly, women were supposed to be working in the kitchen preparing the meal as hostesses, because a woman's worth was tied to her gift of hospitality. How valuable a woman was based on how great a hostess she was. That sounds crazy to you and I, but hospitality was that important in their culture. So for Mary to not be practicing hospitality was a big taboo. Not just that she was sitting and listening to Jesus, which we get, but for her to not be playing hostess, that was a big taboo. I mean, it was borderline sinful for her not to be doing that. But Mary seems, I mean, in her, this story we hear very little from Mary. She just seems oblivious to this. She goes against those cultural norms of her day because her life is not centered on the good things, but on the main thing. Jesus said only one thing was needed, and Mary knew what the only one thing was. And she lived that out despite all of the expectations on her held by the people around her. Her sister certainly wanted her to help preparing the meal. The men around her probably would rather that she excuse her spot so another man could slip in there. Everybody wanted something different from her, but Mary knew what the one thing was. Now, in order for us to be like Mary, in order for us to live out this text, specifically when it comes to taking the second half of the Great Command seriously, when it comes to loving our neighbors, it means that we're going to have to go against some cultural norms. Now, our culture is very different than ancient Hebrew culture. I'll grant you that, but there are still some expectations that are placed on you and me that do not allow us to do what the Great Commandment calls us to do. Unfortunately for us, in our society, living at a pace that allows us to be present in a neighborhood or to a neighbor, living at a pace that much slower, that has become very countercultural. It is not normal to slow down enough to be present to a neighbor. It's not. It's almost as countercultural as Mary going and sitting at the feet of the rabbi. So if we're going to love our neighbors, we're going to have to be present. And for many of us, that means having to say no to some things that everyone else just does without even thinking about it. Now, it means that we're going to have to learn what we're going to call the art of elimination. Now, if you've ever studied art history, or maybe some of you may have even been to Florence, Italy, and seen the statue of the David edited here for sensitive eyes. This is the statue of David, at least half of it, and it's a pretty famous statue. And what you don't realize in looking at this, and you've probably seen this image before, but this statue is enormous. Like, this statue is 17 feet tall. This comes from an enormous slab, a single slab of marble. And if you go and you listen to a tour guide, or if you read a guidebook, or you go online, you read about it, or the history book, if you ever take art history or anything like that, they'll usually tell you the same story every time. They say that when Michelangelo received this huge block of marble, that he was asked about the process. I mean, how do you make something out of a huge block like that? And he just says, I remove everything that wasn't a masterpiece. That was all that had to do, was just to remove everything that wasn't a masterpiece. And I think Jesus' heart for us is that he wants us to embrace the life that he has for us. There has to be some parts of that life that are not the masterpiece. Now, there are all these different things that we have, all these options we have all around us that we can choose to be engaged in. There are a lot of great things out there that you and I, and we in the church, we encourage you to be engaged in things. You know, whether it's civic groups or ministries here or your kids' PTA or whatever it may be. There are some great things to become engaged in. You've got all, if you're like me, you have found some things that you love and things that you do, and your plate is so full that you've got all these different things and all these relationships, and it's just hard to imagine adding onto that plate. It's like when you're going through the line at Thanksgiving, if you're like my house and family gets together and you've got all these things laid out, and you're like, oh, this looks so good. I want some of this. I want a bunch of this. And then you're like, oh, this next thing. This is one of my favorites. I've got to get a bunch of this. And then you get towards the end of the line, and you're like, oh, if I'd known this was down here at the end, I would have made room, but I don't have room for this thing that I absolutely love down here at the end. This happened to anybody else? Oh, good, just fat people. All right. just me. Yeah. You get to the end, and you're like, I don't have room for this one thing, that's my very favorite that I would have absolutely loved to put on my plate, but now I can't fit it on there because I got all this other stuff. I didn't even really like those green beans. And you're thinking to yourself, I wish I had known that up front. And what Mary, the story of Mary and Martha does, what the illustration of Michelangelo teaches us, is that keeping some space in life is really important if we're going to grasp the main thing. What many of us, me included, need to learn is how to remove all the things that aren't at the core of what God wants us to be involved in. Now, Jesus, when we look through the Gospels, you know, nobody ever looks at Jesus. You read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, or even the accounts that the Apostle Paul includes in his letters and stories about Jesus. No one ever looks at those stories about Jesus and goes, wow, that Jesus, he is so hurried. Like, we don't read those stories and think that, right? And at the same time, no one ever reads the Gospels and says, wow, Jesus, really should have got more done. He was neither hurried nor absent. He had this incredible ability to live with healthy rhythms, to focus what was on what was really, really important. Like when all the crowds are pressing on him to teach, now that is like super top of the list, like things we need to do for Jesus, right? Teach people who want to know about Jesus. Here's Jesus, and all these people are wanting to listen to him. You would think that would be like the super top of the list. And yeah, you skip sleep for that, and yeah, you skip meals for that, and you just keep teaching the people who want to learn about God. And man, that's just like the most important thing. And Jesus is like, no more, I got to go. Jesus walks away from an opportunity to teach because he says, now the right thing for me to do is rest. I've just got to rest. Now, to you and I, that is counterintuitive. Jesus, you've only got 3 years before you're going to be killed. You've got to take advantage of every opportunity. Here is this tremendous opportunity. Crowds pressing in on you. They want to learn about you, learn about the kingdom of God, learn about a relationship with God. They want to learn this. Why are you not teaching them? Jesus is like, I got to rest. Now, did Jesus not do enough? He knew the right rhythms. And this art of elimination, it's a crucial skill to living out even the greatest commandment. Now, maybe this morning God is calling you to give up some good thing, some good activity, something that's keeping you busy, so that you can make room for the main thing. But as we leave this morning, I want us to think about this one question. God, what is the main thing you want me to focus on? As you go home today and you're planning out your week or you're planning out the rest of your day, what is the main thing, God, that you want me to focus on? Where do I need to be turning my attentions? Where do I need to be practicing elimination? And if this morning, if we can pray for you, encourage you, lift you up for strength, for forgiveness, for help, for hope, we want you to know that this is a life that God can provide and sustain. And you are a person who is incredibly valuable to him and in his hands. If we can help you in any way this morning, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?